All right, Madam Chair.
Are we ready?
Yes, please.
Okay. For those connected to Par Lumber, I, as the committee chair, read an opening statement, and it is as follows. Good morning. The Design Review Committee meeting of June 22nd, 2021 is now open. My name is Rita Baker, and I am the chair of the Design Review Committee. Before we proceed with the meeting, I would like the audience to know who we are and explain the process for the meeting. The Design Review Committee is a volunteer committee appointed by the Board of County Commissioners to review and make recommendations on design review applications referred to it by the planning director. The committee consists of a variety of professionals and community members with expertise in site and building design, including such elements as architecture, landscape architecture, engineering, and graphic design. The process for the meeting today will be as follows. Planning and Zoning Division staff will present a staff report. Then we will have the applicant go over their proposed plans and address any issues raised in the staff report. Next, although this is not a land use hearing, we will provide an opportunity for public comment. The applicant will then have the opportunity to respond. Finally, the committee will discuss whether the application complies with the approval criteria in the zoning and development ordinance or can comply with appropriate conditions of approval. And the committee will make a recommendation on the application. The decision will be made by the planning director or designee. The planning director's decision may be appealed to the land use hearings officer by any party within 12 days of the date of the decision. Let's see. Well, if you would like to provide comment, please clearly state your name for the record when you speak. If you would like a copy of the planning director's decision, please provide your address to Anthony. We also ask that you testify one at a time, speaking clearly, and this meeting is being recorded. Are there any questions? If there are no questions, I will open the meeting for file number Z0192-21-D. And I'd like to ask the committee if they have any ex parte communication to disclose.
I have none.
Okay. I'm going to guess that neither does Chetimer at this point. Okay. Anthony, would you please proceed with the staff report?
Go ahead. We'll go ahead and get my screen shared. So I'm going to start sharing my presentation here. For those of you who have video access, please let me know if you're kind of giving a thumbs up or seeing it. Great. Excellent. As our chair mentioned, this is Z0192-21, a project of Par Lumber in the former city of Damascus. And, so some background, the project is set at the intersections of Sunnyside Road, State Highway 212, and Southeast Foster. It's actually Foster Road, not Foster Avenue, so apologies. The site is split zone, rural industrial and rural commercial. Staff has looked at the kind of uses and areas allowed in those zones and found that it complies. The site is not impacted by any overlay zoning. Currently, site is, I'll just move to the aerial here. Site is currently developed with these two industrial buildings, some accessory parking, and otherwise it's largely in grass and some trees. So again, this is Southeast Foster Road here, so Highway 212, Sunnyside, coming off along the southern edge of the site. You'll notice, I imagine, that there is somewhat gerrymandered looking site, to borrow a term of art. That is in part because this kind of central donut hole is under separate ownership. The owner did not wish to sell at the time the project was moving forward. So they kind of came up with a site design to work around that space. What's being proposed is demolition of those existing buildings, some limited site preparation and grading, construction of new site access and actually multiple site accesses from Foster Road, Sunnyside, and Damascus Lane, construction of a new wholesale lumber facility, including a store and warehouse building, saw building, dispatch buildings, or a dispatch building, I should say, some lumber sheds and other storage structures. The site will necessarily require new circulation and loading areas, as well as some significant number of parking spaces for employees and visitors to the site. Landscape, obviously new landscape areas, as well as street trees along the roads. And I'll walk through some of that now. Again, here's the site. Now, what you'll notice that this site plan may look a little different than the site area outlined before. That is because this parcel right here is actually being held in reserve for the green field for the site. So although PAR does control this kind of a T-shaped piece of land, no structural development is proposed for the site. It is to be drain field. So four site accesses are proposed. I lay them here in yellow. The primary access from Sunnyside Road, where most visitors to the site in cars will come and go from. Two off of Southeast Foster Road, and then one back here at Southeast Damascus Lane. Multiple buildings on the site, highlighted here in blue. This southern piece is kind of the showroom, although I wouldn't want to necessarily call it a showroom, I'd say it's the main warehouse, public-facing portion of the warehouse, the larger, kind of more storage directed, I guess, warehouse piece behind. I tried to highlight those in a slightly darker blue. Those are the pieces of the site, the buildings on the site, that most day-to-day visitors, I think, would be coming to. And that comes to bear as I talk about parking here in a little bit. Other buildings highlighted in blue, dispatch and saw buildings. I'll be honest, I'm not an expert in the lumber industry, and I don't want to even try to play one on TV. But my understanding is there'll be some limited milling cutting of lumber on site. I'll let the project team speak to the different uses of the buildings maybe a little bit later. Other horizontal buildings for lumber storage. These areas here and here are actually stormwater storage. So they're not, though they show on the site kind of visually heavy, they're not structures in the kind of conventional sense. Wanted to address where the parking is. But it's about 42, 43 parking spots. And you'll see that they are kind of all focused right along that area where most people who are visiting the site or coming to the buildings to work will be coming and going from. And then just the site plan again with all of my little colorful annotations removed. Some words on the building elevations. The elevations have evolved pretty significantly, I think, from our first submittal and from the designs we saw at pre-application conference. And I think evolved in quite a nice direction. This main warehouse building, they're proposing a shed roof. So just to kind of orient a little bit, this southern and western building, which would really be kind of the public-facing element of the site in terms of where people are coming and going from, this south and west elevation are this south and this portion of the west elevations here. I think one of the really notable aspects of this design is this large expanse of storefront glass, which is shown a little bit more clearly in a rendering. To contrast, I didn't put the images of the originally submitted buildings in, because obviously it's not what we're reviewing, but just for the knowledge, I guess, of the committee members. When it came in, it was certainly it very much looked like a lumber yard when it came in initially. And so I think it's really quite progressed in a very nice direction from when it was originally submitted. That same shed roof kind of pattern is reflected also in the dispatch and saw building, which is this building back here internal to the site. In these elevations, although these walls look quite blank, you'll see down at the material elevation notes, they actually are proposing some banded coursing of concrete masonry unit to articulate, give a little variety to that wall, to those walls. You can see a little more clearly here in some of the perspective renderings, the kind of big open expanses of glass on the public facing portion of the building. I'll talk a little bit more about materials here in a moment, but I think to my mind and to my eye, the materials proposed elevate the building, elevate especially the main building, beyond what one might normally anticipate for a lumber yard or a lumber wholesale facility. I think it would be a quite nice building for this part of the former city of Damascus. Building materials, walls tilt up concrete panel, but with a form liner, preferences for vertical banding on that. Again, the storefront glass wood look. It's actually that underside soffit that has a wood look is actually a metal product, but with a wood grain finish. These banded panels are actually to be used at the areas above the garage entrance doors. And then the standing seam metal roof and banded CMU walls for the accessory buildings. Went through the landscape plan. They're certainly meeting the landscape area requirements. I took a look at the mix and variety of species. In terms of maturity, calipers, heights, pot sizes, they comply with our standards. Not wanting to feign knowledge as a landscape architect, I'll maybe defer to Daryl and others as to the specific species and kind of their environmental needs. If there are any concerns there, gladly entertain those comments. But as I noted, street trees along Foster Road, Damascus Lane. So this site, it's interesting. It has rural zoning, rural commercial, rural industrial zoning, but it is within the Portland Metro Urban Growth Boundary. So it's in this interesting kind of neither here nor there, or both here and there kind of condition in terms of our standards. We have many that bind, come into play once you're within the urban growth boundary, but there isn't a ton of rural commercial and rural industrial that is also within the UGB. So stormwater infiltration proposed up here, landscaped around. Broadly speaking, staff feels like it really meets most of our design standards, most of the standards of ZDO or the 1000 series. The proposed recommended conditions of approval, recommended conditions of approval in the staff recommendation largely address any future signage on the site and just ensuring that the trash and waste enclosures are properly located in size. And I know that the applicant's team has been in communication with Emily from our sustainability division on that subject already. There is kind of some idiosyncratic, I guess I'll say. There are some idiosyncrasies about this site, not the least of which is that, go back to my area, certainly the shape of it and the size of it, but its location right here at Foster, Sunnyside, and State Highway 212. As noted in the staff recommendation, there have been some concerns expressed about traffic and traffic load at this intersection. Through our review process, it was in collaboration with ODOT. Let me back up. The State Highway 212 intersection is under ODOT's jurisdiction. And so it is at their discretion to say what does and doesn't satisfy their requirements. There was concern about traffic loading at that intersection during peak hours, and the solution arrived at, again, in collaboration with ODOT, is that this main gate here that will be putting traffic into that intersection will actually be gated, and that gate will be on a timer, an automatic timer, and it will close essentially at the prior to the evening peak hours, with signage directing visitors to one of the other entrances. With that solution, ODOT was satisfied to remove that intersection from the traffic study during the evening hours. It's an unusual solution, but it is one that meets ODOT's requirements and is compliant with our zoning development ordinance. So I just wanted to make sure I address the fact that there were issues raised, concerns raised about it. We have looked further into it, and the solution that we've arrived at is compliant with both the ZDO and ODOT standards, even if it is a little perhaps unusual. With that, I know that was a lot, and I went through it pretty quickly. I would gladly take questions and engage in some dialogue with our committee members.
From me, one of the things that I was hoping to get more clarification on is that central piece of property. And are there long-term hopes that will be acquired and incorporated into this site? Because it, as just the way that the buildings are all backed right up against it, I'm just like, are you trying to convince them to give it to you by putting the backs of the buildings right up against it? Or is there a long-term strategy that you can share?
I will yes. certainly let Melinda and the project team.
Yes, we have had this application in for quite a while, and that property owner realizes that this is going forward and it's going to happen. And they have been willing to talk to PAR about purchasing that. And so our hope is that when we get through design review and receive this permit, we will likely apply for a modification and shift some of the buildings when we incorporate that. We've had some good discussions with them about redesigning their drainage field for them, and that's been positive. And so that's the way we want to go. We didn't want to cloud this discussion. We want to make sure that we get through this cleanly, but it looks like that will be our next step.
Thanks.
It has been the strangest shaped property I've ever designed.
Yeah, it seems quite challenging. So, okay, well, that's good to know kind of what's yeah. what we can forward to seeing.
Yeah. See, Rita, wave your hand. But Rita, you're on mute. I can't.
I think that's what we're going to leave this pandemic with. Rita, you're on mute for all the Zoom meetings. I have a couple questions. On the map I have, it indicates the Sunnyside entrance is for a wholesale store. So there isn't going to be commercial public access?
No, it is public. It is public. We are categorized as wholesale because the bulk of who PAR sells to is wholesale. It'll be smaller contractors. It's public, it's open to the public, but retail is a smaller portion of what they do. And so we've demonstrated that we say wholesale because that's like a 60 to 80%, but it's very much a store for the public to visit.
I have a question about the Saw building. I'm curious about any sound attenuation that has been included in the design.
It is facing interior to the site. It does not face the open portion is to the north. And so it's quite a distance from any road, and there's quite a grade change to that direction, and there will be open lumber. There will be lumber between the saw and the north side, but that's quite a distance. And then it's also the saw itself is in the center, and so it's buffered on either side by both storage and the dispatch.
So I'm hearing there's no special sound attenuation for it. You're relying on distance?
Placement and distance, yes.
Okay. Anthony, you had mentioned that there's still discussions about the trash enclosure location. Do we have a general idea of where it will be?
We do. So I believe that this rectangle here is the currently proposed location for it. It is of adequate size. I believe that they've worked with the hauler just to, I mean, it's a a pretty open loading yard, so access also should not be an issue given, you know.
Well, according to the site plan I have, that's where the fire hydrant goes in the catch basement. And yeah.
Okay. Melinda, am I incorrect or?
No, that's correct. That's a trash hoop closure. We have been in discussion with waste office, and we are hoping to be able to be a little more flexible with where we place that. We're happy with it if that's where it ends up. It's enclosed, it's shielded from the street, and it's the trash truck, the garbage truck and recycling truck can do a loop straight out to Foster Road. So they would enter on Sunnyside, load up, and then exit on Foster. And so we've provided kind of an easy exit for them.
Okay. One more question. According to my engineer scale, the Sunnyside entrance is about 120 feet from the intersection with the state highway. Is that about right? I'm just kind of curious as to why that was chosen when you had Southeast Foster as a means of the major access.
It was largely the setback along Foster and the size of both warehouse and store that we needed. As it is, it's a pretty narrow building. But it's quite functional for what PAR does. Also, just circulation. We tried several different layouts with the square footage that we needed for both store and warehouse, and all the outbuildings. And so largely it came down to circulation. But the large setback on Foster was very prohibitive.
Yeah, I live near here, and I can tell you that intersection is almost constantly backed up. It's not signalized there, and boy, it's going to be a challenge for you. But
and that's why on Sunnyside, it's a right in, right out only. That was one of the agreements that we came to with ODOT.
Okay.
Hey, this
can
is
I,
a.
Can I just add to that? I was just going to say that is an existing driveway to that site. And so that was also a reason to preserve it. Because once you eliminate a driveway, it's gone forever along a street like that. And so, yeah, the right in, right out means that people will be taking a right off of Sunnyside into the site. People that would come out Sunnyside would still have to go out Highway 212 and go around or come through Foster. Or they can go back. I live out there too. So your other choice is to go 172nd to Foster and then come in from the backside.
Hey, this is Chetimer. And I have a couple questions. One, it seems like that stormwater system is designed to infiltrate all of the stormwater. And with that, have you guys started a process with the DEQ to register these as underground injection control systems? And two, what, if any, effects the system will have for the adjacent septic system? And then also, I don't know if there was any proximity to drinking wells.
There are not active drink wells. We have one that's north of the convenience store, but it's the survey, the most recent survey that we did in the past few months marks it as unused. The center lot that is currently designated the drainage field lot, that's the lowest point of all of the five lots. And so to your first point, we have not gone forward with the DEQ process yet. This was our civil engineer's submission. With the design it, the new design with the combined drainage field, when we apply for modification, that will likely revisit whether we can do more surface treatment or if we'll stay with this underground system entirely. But we do have that entire southern lot to work with as far as infiltration possibilities.
I can add to that too, Melinda. Just before, when we design these stormwater systems, two things we have to do is water quality and water quantity, so detention and treatment. These are treatment facilities. And then that's informed by a geotechnical report. So the geotech will go out there and they'll dig test pits to check infiltration rates. And then it has to meet the county standards for infiltration and sizing for treatment. So those underwater facilities are treatment facilities, so canisters. And then the reason they're so large is so that they can infiltrate. And so to your other point about DEQ, we typically don't pursue that until we're actually past the preliminary approval stage. So, I mean, if the county came back and conditioned us to relocate those or to resize them or something like that, we don't want to have to go into DEQ multiple times. We would just go into them one time if we can. So that would come after the modification.
That's fine. I was just curious more than anything else.
Any other questions about the site design and the design of things as we see them today?
So, why do we have stormwater in the parking lots, and then also I'm just curious, and then also the bioswales out front?
So the bioswales will treat water from the public street modification. So we have to expand or widen the streets and make improvements along our frontages. So we have to treat that public water separately from private water. And so what you're seeing in the parking lot is actually underground. So there will be parking above that. It wouldn't be parking.
Sure.
I mean, you wouldn't see that right in the middle. And that's to treat private stormwater. So public and private stormwater have to be treated separately.
Okay. So you're still treating it on private land. You're treating the public on private land, though.
It's in the right of way, but it's a swale. So it is treated through the swale. So plantings in the swale would be treated.
So it is in the public. That swale is in the public right of way.
That's correct.
Oh, okay, great. Oh, great. Yeah, it's more of a, while I'm on that, I noticed you had your ground covers, your sedges and rushes and stuff in the bottom. There was like four types. Yeah, right in the bottom there. You just had a hatch, and then it says on the plan, the four types. I don't, there were no quantities for each of those four types. I don't know if they're equal or how. Anyway, there's a comment there. You might check on that to see if they're equal quantities or there's no quantities. There's a total quantity, but there's not. You got four types of shrubs in one quantity, or four types of ground cover, sedges and rushes. So that was a comment. And then my only other comment was your ground covers. You have one that's 10 feet high. It's just a typo. It should be 10 inches. I can't remember. I think it's Mahoney and Reppins.
Thank you. Yeah. And we'll So the landscape architect put this in as a preliminary. And so when it goes to construction, the market's going to dictate actually what the mix is. But ultimately, we have to meet the county prescriptive standards for spacing on those shrubs. So those shrubs would be, you know, like one of those four types would be planted within that area, and or all four. But it might vary based on what's available on the market.
I don't recall. It's the WES, right?
No, the landscaping is county standard.
How about the, I mean, the treatment center is, I mean, the treatment is WES, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and so I think they require, don't quote me on that. Also, I think they require three types of shrubs, maybe. I do a lot of different jurisdictions, so you might, as far as you know, that those ground covers in the bottom, I think they require three types of each category, so you might also check that. You got four right now, so I'm not, like, as far as what's in the bottom.
Perfect, thank you.
Yeah, that's my only comment. The rest of it, yeah. Also, well, I'll make another comment. It was kind of funny that there you have a note that says, I checked, that you need to provide a provision for an irrigation design, which we require, or an irrigation system. But I'm not sure why we would provide a provision and then just not say that the contractor shall provide an irrigation system. It just struck me as a funny way of saying it, but maybe I don't understand legalese.
I guess I'm not following you, but
following. Yeah, it says that the I don't know. It says the landscape contractor. I think this is me.
I would just say that a lot of times when we're planting a new site, it'll be a design build on the landscape or the irrigation, and so then there would be as-built provided to the county with the final design.
Okay. Well, it says landscape. Probably use this. This landscape installation shall include provision of an automatic irrigation system.
That's correct.
So well, yeah. Why doesn't it say a landscape? I mean, an automatic irrigation system shall be installed. It's maybe I'm just overworking a.
It might be just semantics, but so
yeah, it's just a matter of semantics.
We're required, you know, we can't plant them and let them die. The county would come right out after us. So that's why when they plant, they're required to also at the same time install on-site irrigation, and it's typically a design build.
Since we use that language, if there's an existing irrigation system and we're redesigning it for a new landscape installation. So again, semantics.
Yeah, it's bad. It's just funny. I'm not, it's just a way of, yeah. Anyway, well, those are my only comments.
All right. Any other comments, questions?
Yeah, I wanted to be sure the applicant was okay with the conditions and findings in the report. If you have anything to add to Anthony's overall presentation of the site design and architecture.
We do have a couple notes just in response to this. Last summer, we updated our drawings and we removed the T-shed at the north. So the northmost building there is not there because we had added additional storage next to the saw building. And so we would have exceeded our allowed square footage. And so the T-shed would be removed. Let's see, there was a note on page 15 that referred to our previous materials, cultured stone and brick, and you know now we're doing form lined tilt up and oak oak panel. So that was just an update. We did want clarification on page 20 about the signage easement. Page 20, it was comments, or 21, page 21, comment 6. We just would like some clarification on the 8-foot easement on all of those roads, if we're allowed to have asphalt in that easement.
Yeah, and I believe you are, just with the understanding that it needs to be, I don't believe structure can go there, but you could put pavement with the understanding that it is still a public utility easement. And so if a utility needs to go in, then we pulling up some blacktop and putting it back down.
One more clarification I would like is page 10. No, let's see. I've got too many numbers running around. Page 18, comment 10. And specifically signage, that is the signage part of our building permit package, or is it a separate package, signage permit?
Yeah, really good question. So signage will come in. It won't be a separate land use application for the signage. When you go to do the signage, it can be part of the building permit application. I have also seen times where people have come in and gotten approval for a site and put the building up, and then usually for like a spec space or something, where they've come in and done the building under a separate permit just for the mounting brackets and the structural of the wall sign, done under a separate building permit. But you can do it either way. In either case, when it comes through building permit, we'll click a little box in our internal system that will basically do the signage review just to make sure it's compliant with Section 1010 through the building permit process. So it wouldn't be a separate land use application. It would just be something, a review that we do through our building permit review. And so long as the signs that we're reviewing, the signs that come in are the signs that were in the design review submittal, it's basically just say, is it the same? Yes, no. Check if no is what they're proposing compliant. Yes, no. If it's not, if it was not included in the design review submittal and is not compliant with 1010, that's when we reach out and say, hey, you're over your signage. You can't have blinking lights. I'm sorry, you can't have a rotating flamingo on your roof. I would love that, but, things like that.
Okay.
If you do want to have a rotating flamingo, I will move heaven and earth to make it possible.
This is Damascus, not Vegas, Anthony.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah. What can I say? I'm dreaming of vacation. In the desert.
I know. Okay, those were my comments. Any other comments from my team that we needed addressed? I think we're good.
Okay, any other comments or questions from the committee? Todd?
It looks like a very creative and good design for the site. It's a tough site with the configuration of it.
Anything else, Chetimer? Yeah. Anything else, Chetimer or Tracy? Daryl?
Nope.
Not for me.
Okay, then I'll close the hearing. Do we have any public in the waiting room, Anthony?
There are some folks in the waiting room, both of whom I have either added in as panelists or kind of given ability to unmute and speak up. So speak now or until the appeal period, hold by peace.
Yes, anybody in the waiting room or panel now, if you just identify yourself and ask any questions you might have. Well, I'm not hearing any, so I think I'll close the public hearing. I don't think that there was any issues that are outstanding on the conditions. Should I perhaps get a motion? Well, not all at once. Tracy, would you be willing to do that?
Yes, sorry, I was checking my notes real quick. yes, I'd like to make a motion to approve design review Z0192-21 with the referenced conditions of approval.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Hearing none, thank you.
Well, great. That's that checks that one off the list. Thanks, everyone. So just for the folks who are with us from the PAR team, there are a couple other things that we have to discuss related to, not related to this project. You're welcome to stay on and enjoy, but if not, we won't be offended if you take your leave of us. Look, I will... be issuing the staff decision, I would imagine, by close of business tomorrow. It's essentially drafted. There are a couple of things that I think we noted that I'm just going to go tidy up in terms of references to previous material palettes and the like, but there won't be any additional kind of conditions or untoward surprises. So,
okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everyone. So on our agenda, Glenn, my colleague and compatriot here at the county, has just joined us to talk about some potential changes to our material exterior facade material standards. But Rita, I believe you had something that you wanted to discuss.
Well, I just had questions, and maybe you could stop the screen share.
Oh, am I still sharing my screen? Gosh, I'm sorry.
There we go. So I can see all our
there we are.
Pretty faces.
Smiling faces,
yes. Well, I was curious about how there was a change in the staff report format.
Yes.
I don't know what the advisory notes were. Were they like, did you really mean it? Or,
really great question. So... We, in a couple cases recently, this is a format that we're going to for all of our type 2 and type 3, well, all of our type 2 staff recommendations and decisions. Because what we bumped up against is that we'll receive recommended conditions of approval from partner divisions and agencies. So our ZDO requires projects be compliant with their standards. But that tie is somewhat legally tenuous. And so it's the purpose there is to basically separate what is a requirement of the zoning and development ordinance. What can we lawfully enforce upon and effectuate through our staff decision versus what is a additional development requirement that lives outside of the ZDO. So that's things like the building code or the traffic, the county roadway engineering standards, or Wes's kind of Clackamas River water. If they say, oh, you need to upsize your water meter, well, they're going to be required to do that. They're not going to be able to get signed off on a building permit without doing that. But it doesn't actually really live in the zoning code, other than the zoning code saying you have to follow their rules as well. And so what we were running into was a circumstance where it was muddled what was and was not appealable. So essentially, like, they can't appeal, like, an applicant would not be able to appeal a Clackamas County Engineering Roadway Standard, which they're required to do as a condition of development. They're not going to get an engineering permit without meeting those standards. But they would occasionally come and say, well, you've mentioned this in the conditions of approval, but really... that requirement lives outside of the zoning code. It isn't really appealable to our land use hearings officer or to LUBA or to any of that. And so that's the new format is an attempt at saying, hey, we're putting this information in there to advise you that this will be required And you do have to do it to do this project, but it's not a zoning code requirement. So if you don't like the roadway engineering standards, please don't try to appeal them to us, because we can't change them. Our land use hearing officer can't change them. LUBA, frankly, can't. I mean, they might be able to, but and that's the reason for it. And it's something we're kind of still settling into and figuring out. It's a change for sure. But that's the rationale behind it.
I understand the logic. I think advisory is what is confusing me.
I see.
It isn't advisory per se.
No.
You know,
it's only advisory in the context of that land use decision. Like, that land use decision is not, it's advisory that we're advising you that you have to do this, but we're not advising you that we're telling you you have to do it. But I think you're right that advisory is does create the potential for confusion, especially among an applicant. That, yeah.
How about an ancillary?
Ancillary.
Conditions or something like that.
Additional development requirements.
Yes.
Or something to that effect.
Yeah. Advisory sounds like, well, apparently I don't have to do this.
If you wanna.
And the other thing I noticed, Anthony, and maybe it was just peculiar to this application, mm-hmm. There were no planning conditions per se. It was all contained in the findings. Was that just unique with this application?
So they were the only real condition. I mean, when it came through more or less compliant. So there wasn't there wasn't, frankly, a lot of condition.
Yeah.
It's not one where I had to say, you know, change the caliper. You're showing 1-inch caliper trees. You've got to show us two. Or it came through for the most part compliant. So there really weren't a lot of planning conditions to proper, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I know it was in the signs, but at any rate, well, I think they're, I think that the use is needed in the community. I just think the design is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah. The site design, especially. I mean, I think architecturally it's pretty nice.
Oh yeah.
But I have my questions as to whether the solutions they've arrived at are best practice, but I have to go with what the code says and what ODOT says. And
I get you.
Time lock gate was a really strange thing.
I agree.
I've never heard of anything.
When that came up, I mean, we're still in session, so I won't. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yes. I expressed my surprise, both in a meeting and privately, to that solution.
Yeah, I mean, if it breaks, oops,
right,
it broke. And I also would have liked to have seen some sound attenuation with that saw building. I'm sorry, it's going to reverberate throughout that area. And I'm a fan of terracotta, and that's just going to be a little different ambiance, let's just say. But anyway, that's enough of that.
Sure.
From me.
So we have Glenn, who's joined us for a discussion of some changes to our building material standards. And so, Glenn, I don't know if I will let you steer from here.
Yeah. First, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Glenn. I'm a senior planner in the same office as Anthony. Slightly not different functions. Yeah. one of those functions being I work with amendments to the zoning code. And every year the county does a package of what we sort of internally refer to as minor amendments and time-sensitive amendments. It's meant to be sort of an omnibus package of cleanup stuff, maybe some amendments that are necessary to address new state or federal mandates that just came down that require us to make some changes to our zoning code. It's also a package of amendments to address items that require minimal staff analysis. You know, it may not be something that we need to do a whole lot of research over a year to come up with a policy proposal, but rather something more limited. And it's also used to make changes to the zoning code to address what are clear Board of County Commissioner priorities that don't necessarily require lots of staff time to analyze. So we have a package of minor amendments coming for this fiscal year. And the package of minor amendments includes an amendment related to exterior building materials. And I'll be sure to provide a copy of the proposed amendments to this group at the end of this meeting. So you don't need to scramble to take notes. But for context, the reason why this amendment is in this package is because of a specific request of the Board of County Commissioners. So it wasn't necessarily an idea of staff that were just sort of jumping ahead of your advice to propose changes to these exterior building material standards, but rather the board from the top says, you shall propose this. They're not wedded to any decision and no decisions have been made. They at least just want this put out there as part of the public process to be considered. And with that direction, we also spoke to the Planning Commission at a study session, because the Planning Commission will hear all of these amendments first, and then they make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners of what they think should actually be adopted. And we always like to give them a heads up of, hey, by the way, sometime this summer, you're going to get a package of amendments and they're going to cover these issues. Do you have any major concerns about them that we should take into account when we're actually drafting the amendments? So we talked to them about this and we got their input. Now, what the issue actually is to allow metal expressly as an exterior building material, despite the existing language in the code that, of course, you might be pretty familiar with, of having that somewhat vague and troublesome language about high image materials. So you all are more up to speed on the challenges with this term than I am. But I understand, you know, it's been hard over the years to define, well, what exactly is high image? And how do we communicate that to developers of exactly what the requirements are? And then there have been cases where somebody has, as I understand it, Anthony, somebody has proposed a project that they felt like was high image and we denied it, or there's been at least some disagreement on exactly what high image is. So we want to remove that terminology entirely and just be clear about what we will accept and won't accept. At the same time, the Board of County Commissioners, and with the unanimous support of the Planning Commission, although no decisions have been made, is to allow metal as an exterior building material without any restrictions. So no restrictions on it having, for example, exterior fasteners, the amount of metal that can be used in exterior. No prohibitions even on the use of corrugated metal or any requirements that the exterior of a building also include other treatments. Some jurisdictions, for example, allow for the use of metal on the exterior of a building pretty permissively, but they require that, for example, the lower portions of a building be some other type of material, for example, stone. That can be both aesthetic, for aesthetic purposes, but also to prevent, for example, in industrial areas, denting on buildings with vehicles backing into the side of a structure, for example. The board has been clear, and the Planning Commission has been clear, that at least in the proposal of these amendments, they don't want any such limitations. When we raised the idea to the board, when you're talking to the board about this idea a couple months back, we asked them if they would like to have one standard for urban areas and maybe a different standard for rural areas. They did not see a reason, at least at that time, to have any distinction between any different areas of the county. So every area of the county should be treated the same when it comes to the use of metal. However, at that time, there was some things that they just didn't know about that we're going to make sure to highlight as we go through this public process. And that's something that we can talk about as a group too. But for example, the Fuller Road Station community or Sunnyside Village or up in the government camp area those are areas of the county that have, as the result of some pretty extensive public outreach efforts and some design thoughts, some area specific design standards. And we didn't address that with the board at the time. So they were just very clear that uniform standards countywide. We may come back to the Planning Commission and then to the board as well and clarify that, well, if we do what it is that you at least thought about doing earlier this calendar year, that would potentially be more of a change than you anticipated. And there might be some concerns about it specifically up in the Mount Hood area where there's been a lot of work or at least some intentions about creating a certain design aesthetic and allowing the use of metal as an exterior building material to the extent that we would allow it, you know, in an urban area in the Portland metro area, maybe more than you intended. So there are those discussions out there. They also, though, wanted to the language that we proposed to allow for even rusted materials out of an appreciation for some buildings that have intentional rust on them. This was supported unanimously by the Planning Commission as well as by the board that we should be sure that our rules don't prohibit somebody from using, I'm just going to call intentional rust or corrosion, but that we should have some sort of standards at how to get at that. And so Anthony and I had, I think, uncovered maybe from the city of Detroit or Chicago, but another jurisdiction, some language that I think just really economically gets at that idea. And that's what we've more or less incorporated into our draft amendments. And maybe if I can share my screen, I'll just share that paragraph and explain how it would work mechanically. It looks like I would need to have screen sharing.
I just made you a co-host. So.
Oh, great. Oh, Ajit. Okay. And like I say, I'll share PDF copies of this with the entire group, but just so you have a visual, as we talk about this briefly this morning, this would be one of the sections, subsections that we would be amending. There are others, and it's in section 1005 of the zoning code, the site and building design standards. And you can see some of the proposed strike changes. We would allow metal expressly as a building material that you can use on the exterior of a structure. And then we would add this provision. We would say that the surfaces of metal exterior building materials that are subject to rust or corrosion shall be coated to inhibit such rust or corrosion, meaning that if they haven't already been rusted, you have to coat them so that they will not rust or corrode. Now, if the surfaces of the metal exterior building materials are already rusted or corroded, they need to be stabilized and coated to inhibit additional or future rust or corrosion. I'm hopeful that we're on the right track with the wording here to get at that idea that I mentioned, where allowing existing intentionally rusted materials to stay that way, and also prohibiting materials that aren't yet rusted or corroded from becoming rusted or corroded. Through the public process, we might decide that there's better language to get at that, but that's the goal, at least.
Can I interrupt?
Yes, please.
Could we say, just put it instead of and, you got and corrosion, such rust and corrosion, or would or be more appropriate? The surfaces of metal exterior buildings with rust. So you're not adding that?
At least grammatically in my head right now, I'll make a note of that. But I think that we would want and in the case that somebody proposes an exterior building material that has some elements of it that are purposefully rusted and other elements of it that are not purposefully rusted. But we need to make sure that we would address both situations in a design proposal.
Well, how about just the new sentences? Just stop at the end of corrosion, put a period there instead of the and the, just start with the.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense grammatically, I think, that we could just create two new sentences there.
Yeah, just get rid of that and then it doesn't kind of like melt into your other concept.
Might be easier to digest as a reader. Yeah.
Yeah. And less. Yeah.
Okay.
And then more of a statement. It's, and there's no less ambiguity.
Yeah. So this is where the main amendment would occur. But in this same section of the zoning code, 1005, we have these standards that have applied to certain specific areas of the county. For example, we have several pages that speak specifically to the Fuller Road Station community, and we have made the same amendments. And it's going to show up a couple of times, maybe three times, actually. Because there's essentially three different ways this standard can be applied in the Fuller Road Station community. So making the same amendments there. Question for everybody will be, is this an appropriate change to make for the Fuller Road Station community? Or should the Fuller Road Station community continue to be treated differently in terms of the allowance for exterior building materials than other urban areas of the Portland metro region? Jumping further down, we have standards for the Sunnyside Village area, where we would be making the same change. And the same question will be out there. Is the intention to newly allow metal exterior building materials even in the Sunnyside Village area, despite the efforts that were made years ago to have very particular design standards applied to the area? And then finally, also up in Government Camp. Now, the Government Camp amendments are going to look a little bit different because it's at least questionable whether metal can already be used as an exterior building material in the MRR district of the Government Camp area. I think Anthony and I would agree that there's nothing in the code that expressly prohibits the use of metal like it does in other zones. And so we're going to treat it as if it's already allowed, but expand the allowance for roofing materials. What it says right now is that with regard to roofing materials, you can't have any composite shingles or galvanized or corrugated metal roofs. And to be consistent with the board's direction and the Planning Commission's recommendation, we would expand that allowance because we believe that metal, at least elsewhere on the structure, is already allowed. The only restriction is with regards to galvanized or corrugated metal roofs. And so we would clarify that you can also have metal roofing, regardless of whether or not it's galvanized or corrugated, but to the same with the same requirements for protections against rust or corrosion as elsewhere. We're going to have really clear conversations with the Planning Commission about what these changes would mean. And the public notice that's going out calls out this issue pretty bluntly. We send public notice to all active community planning organizations, to all active hamlets and to all cities in the county, as well as to other interested parties. And on this notice, I have very clearly spelled out that there's this proposed change. And if adopted, at least as proposed, would mean it applies to all these special areas as well. So we might hear, for example, from CPOs in these special areas, including up in the Government Camp area, that they're very much opposed to it. And their input may convince the Planning Commission to recommend to the board that we not adopt these changes, at least for their area. I can see that happening, maybe. Or the board might themselves choose to not go ahead with this amendment, at least as it applies to the Government Camp. So I just want to underscore that no decisions have been made. We might, I'll just say, hear some blowback or at least some opposition to this from the public, at least in certain areas. But that's just sort of part of the process. We're just putting this idea out there for the conversation, and we're going to hear what people think and make a decision after all that. So the first public hearing is before the Planning Commission, who will just be making a recommendation. And the Planning Commission hearing is, off the top of my head, I think July 26th. It'll say in the public notice that I send you. But the input of the county's design review committee could count for a lot. You know, the people on the Planning Commission, I believe there's at least one architect, but they're not necessarily designers. And same with the board. They may have their own particular reasons why they want to move forward with this as a change anyway, but I can imagine them being very appreciative of at least the input of the design review committee or members of the committee. They want to make it easier for developers to understand what the rules are, which I think is always everybody's desire. So clarifying the high image materials issue, I think, is worthy in any context. And I think that the Planning Commission and the board sees other jurisdictions allowing metal and it turning out just fine, that it turns results in attractive structures and attractive development. And they also are hesitant about treating different areas of the county different than others, or at least without a good explanation of why that is appropriate. So if the design review committee as a group, and Anthony and the group would know more about how this would work procedurally than I would, but perhaps could put together a group comment on the amendments, or if any individual members want to just write their own comments in, supportive of or in opposition to or suggesting certain changes be made to these amendments, they'd certainly be welcome and they'd be shared with both groups. I wonder if I can answer any questions about just kind of what this is all about. Does anybody have any questions? Is anybody furious with this? Does anybody have excited about this? Or I honestly have no idea.
This is something we've discussed for a long time.
Okay.
I'm a little overdue. Concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's good that this is coming up in a more official capacity because, like Todd said, we've been going back and forth about it as it comes up now and then. Basically, anytime someone tries to like overuse, concrete block or metal or something, something where it's not like not quite the outcome everyone was hoping for as far as building materials are concerned. But yeah, I've already got a couple of thoughts, but I'll like put
them
once I have a chance to like more thoroughly read through the amendments, then I'll probably just put some comments together. And
that'd be appreciated. You know, especially on the government camp topic, I myself don't know why it might be really good to have a prohibition on the use of corrugated metal on roofing up in the government camp area. And I'm just not going to be able to speak to that to the same degree that others might be, or at least without the help of Anthony. And so if people have feelings of why it's really important to continue to prohibit corrugated metal, et cetera, in the government camp area, for example, to maintain some particular aesthetic, that would be useful for the Planning Commission and the board to hear. I think I personally am skeptical that there'll be the groups will be receptive to allowing different or prohibiting certain exterior building materials in the Fuller Road Station community, only because that area seems less distinctive than some of the other urban areas of the Portland metro region. But maybe that's not the case. Maybe there is something distinctive about it and some intention about creating a distinctive visual aesthetic there that warrants continuing to prohibit metal as it could be used anywhere else in the county. If people feel that way, if you want to share what you think about it, much appreciated.
My thoughts are that, yeah, good luck overriding what CPOs and Hamlets thought had been addressed and heard. And so I think that, as you said, maybe it just hadn't come to the attention of the commission and the board that that work had been done. That doesn't mean that it couldn't happen still, but it just means you have to be able to say, okay, we revisited this and everybody's fine with it. I don't agree with the idea of not acknowledging the urban versus the rural character. I think that that's a barn at downtown Portland would be very strange to my aesthetic. And I also commend you for making sure that there be some kind of coating on a rusted building, because I've seen the damage that untreated buildings have done to sidewalk and other, you know, other public infrastructure.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I also like that it's been included. I think, because I think core 10, because we're, I mean, we're essentially talking about like core 10 steel and like that type of thing, like intentionally rusted surfaces, which have definitely have like a time and a place and they can look really great. But yeah, it's the long-term maintenance that becomes an issue. So I think that's a good way to address it.
To give you a little bit of a flavor of what the discussion was at the board, well, it's all online if you want to watch it, but you know, some of the comments that were shared, at least with the board, or could have been the planning commission, was, okay, yeah, there seems to be this concern about metal that is not properly coated or treated, resulting in rust. And then others asked, you know, a devil's advocate question of, well, we don't have the same standards for the protection of wood. And so they tried to balance how they were, their requirements for the use of metal with the requirements for the use of any other exterior building material. But ultimately, there seemed to be broad agreement that it would be appropriate to have some sort of coating or treatment to prevent unintentional rusting or corrosion, and to lock any intentional rusting or corrosion sort of in place. They didn't, I was asked very directly, why should there be different standards between urban areas and rural areas? And I don't have a good response for that. But if others feel like there should be, and you have some ideas of why that's the case, we can certainly share those with the Planning Commission and the board.
Yeah, aesthetics and personal opinion are hard to quantify.
Yeah. I should have at the outset made sure that I was, that this only applies to institutional, commercial, industrial, or multiple duplexes and triplexes on the same property. So it wouldn't apply to a single duplex that somebody wants to build on their singular lot. It wouldn't apply to, of course, a new detached single family dwelling or to a pole barn out in the rural areas. This will only apply to, again, institutional, so things like schools or libraries or hospitals, commercial uses, industrial uses, and then again, those groupings of more than one duplex, triplex, or to a multifamily development. But what I'll do is I'll just make sure that I can get a copy of the public notice, as well as a copy of this zoning code section. We're amending 27 sections of the zoning code. I'm not going to send you all of those. They'll be online in case you're just curious and want to know what else is going on. And the public notice summarizes those other issues. And maybe some of those issues are of interest to you, and I can simply send you those amendments as well. There's an amendment, for example, talking about signage for drive-thrus. I don't know if that's a topic for this group, Anthony, or not, but
it is. Yes.
Okay. I'll just say
it is. I mean, we don't have, I mean, you and I have had any number of conversations where we don't super have standards that are directly applicable to drive-thrus. And so,
yeah,
I don't know that we've spent a lot of time analyzing the question as a group, or I haven't maybe with the group, but largely because of the lack of standards to tie it to.
Yeah. Well, then just a few sentences about that. And then if this group or anybody has comments or ideas about that particular issue too, certainly send them to me and we'll forward them on. That issue, though, is to address a gap in our code with regard to signage for approved commercial drive-throughs. There's nothing in the code that says drive-through businesses gets to have any additional signage. They're subject to the same signage limits as any other commercial use, despite us knowing that, well, when you go through a drive-through, they have menu boards, they have all these other things that are signs. We can't regulate content. We can never say you can have a sign, additional signage, provided that they are displaying menu items. We can't regulate based on the content. So in this package of amendments, we're proposing to expressly allow drive-through signs. And we're going to define what those are. They're either freestanding or attached to the building that are oriented to the approved drive-through lanes for viewing by customers in the drive-through lane and are no taller than 8 feet. The idea behind those is that that will give some restrictions on these becoming signs that are pointed off to the roadways and not serving as a traditional drive-through sign. Beyond those basic restrictions, though, that they be oriented to the drive-through lane, be for viewing by the customers and no taller than 8 feet, neither the board or the planning commission is so far in support of any other restrictions on them. So as proposed under the amendments, you could have any number of drive-through signs that meet these criteria of any sign area. They just didn't want to get into the business of saying, well, you can have three of these and two of these, knowing that commercial drive-throughs, you know, whether it's Starbucks or McDonald's or whatever, have all sorts of different things going on, corporate things going on. And I think that they just didn't want to get into parsing every particular type of sign that McDonald's might send out to one of their franchise owners that they put up in something. There may be suggestions on those. And so that might be in your wheelhouse as well. And we'll gladly forward on any comments you have about it. But with that, I'll just make a note to send you these amendments.
I wish you could put a requirement that they have a canopy over the ordering area. Man, when it's pouring around and you've got to have that hamburger.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Wayfinding.
I don't know, Rita. I look for ones that don't have that because my van won't fit under most of them.
There you go. That's true. All right. Yeah, wayfinding, I think, is important, too. Recently constructed Starbucks at 212 and, God, what is it? Harmony?
212 and 135th, I think.
Somewhere in there. I mean, the driveway there, which I think was a good choice, is far from the intersection. But once those buildings finally become filled, it's your average person says, oh, there's a Starbucks. How do I get there?
Yeah. Yeah. And then how do you leave the parking lot? I always get trapped in the parking lot and can't get out. Yeah. Well, okay. I'll actually make sure to send you, I'll send you both these code sections, the sign section, just so you can read it if you're curious, because it's sort of in the design review world. Right. And then, and also the exterior building materials section, and then if there's any other issue on the public notice that even just you personally are interested in and want copies of the amendments on, I'll be happy to provide them.
All right. Good presentation. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for the time. It's good to meet all of you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate
it. Take care.
Anything else for the good of the order? Anything coming up?
Nothing in the door right now. One or two things have come in. I think there's a food cart pod that literally came in like yesterday. I haven't even done a completeness review on it yet.
Another one.
Well, then I've also heard from the one that went through before, and now they're not as certain that they're going to try to do the physical standalone structures, and we're wondering if they can change the plan to do
sweet tomato ones.
Yeah, the sweet tomato one to do pad sites instead of that. And I had to kind of tell him like, yeah, that's not really what was approved. So we'll see what comes to pass with that one. On the subject of these exterior building materials, certainly by all means, I would be very enthusiastic for any or all of you to let your will and your thoughts be known. I think I will leave that to you as a body to do. I think it might be a little unseemly, I guess, for me to be particularly involved if it's a recommendation contrary to what our other staff recommendation is. I wouldn't want to have to say, oh, and Anthony and the design review committee think this, and sorry, Glenn, you're wrong. Anyways, that's just my kind of.
So basically, just gather our comments and then just.
Yeah, gather them. Comments. If you want to send them to Glenn, if you want to send them directly to the planning commission, or to the Board of County Commissioners, either individually, or if you want to work together and come up with a draft, like, you know, we the undersigned members of, I'll leave that entirely to y'all.
All right.
Other than that, thank you. I know this is kind of a long one. I appreciate y'all hanging in there, but I thought it was kind of important to make sure you're apprised and involved of these design standard changes. I'm kind of tangentially involved in the project, so I wanted to have Glenn kind of come quarterback that one.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. Bye.